it's quite a groundbreaking technology, because what it allows to do is it brings direct debit to Bitcoin. And it does so, including in a self-custodial environment.
And for most Westerners, I think today's need is, how do I protect myself from inflation? How do I store the value of my time and labor? And and obviously Bitcoin serves that now.
I mean, there's so many Bitcoin companies whose only target customer are Bitcoiners, yet they charge them only in dollars because there's no solution for subscriptions in Bitcoin, right?
There are a lot of headaches that business owners have with banks and with legacy fiat that, like, they're just probably just kind of accustomed to. And if you propose something that can just eliminate that friction, like, that's a huge value add to them.
I just show them, see, this is Noster, some decentralized stuff, doesn't matter, but it looks like Twitter, but I've got this extra button and it allows me to, like, make instant microtransactions that no one can stop, no one can censor, and this person received the payment instantly.
Hey there, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Today on the show, I have Pierre Corbin, who is co-founder and CEO of Flash. Flash is an awesome company. It is a means of accepting Bitcoin as payment for your business. And they have all sorts of cool features, subscriptions, many other things we talk about. We dive into the importance of medium of exchange in Bitcoin and a whole host of other fun topics. And I think you're going to absolutely love this conversation. I know I sure did. Hey, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Pierre here with me. Pierre, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Hey, yeah, thanks for having me. Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this conversation. Like I told you offline, we're going to talk a lot about Bitcoin as a medium of exchange, and that is a hot topic at the Bitcoin Way because we believe people should be spending Bitcoin. I'll just, you know, say it up front. But there's sort of a hot take that stirred up a lot of comments and I wouldn't say controversy, but just different takes on this. The million sat question, Jeff Booth says that Bitcoin, and by the way, I'm a big Jeff Booth fan, but he says that if Bitcoin fails as a medium of exchange, it fails as a store of value as well. And I would love to hear, as someone building in the medium of exchange use case, what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, so I really love Jeff Booth as well. I think he's such an inspiring person, always so kind, so much knowledge. 100% agree with you there. And I think, you know, Jeff Booth's comment is quite deep and philosophical, essentially. I think in contrast to, like, what Michael Saylor is saying, I think that's the best contrast we can do, right? Because Michael Saylor is the person that is really pushing this idea that that Bitcoin is only good as store of value. And I think it's a matter of time frame, essentially. I think that, I understand why Michael Saylor would be saying this now. And especially, I'm pretty sure that Michael Saylor understands Bitcoin very well, likely better than me even, right? So I think it's really the idea that today, the easiest use case, especially in the West, is to think about Bitcoin as a store of value. The moment everyone has Bitcoin for its store of value purposes, well, then, I mean, you're going to want to spend your Bitcoin. And I think this then can come as a second step. That's what, you know, I hope is in the sight of Michael Saylor's mind. Because the truth is that, as Jeff Booth says, and I think it's true, if in the end no one is using it, well, then I think there's a moment where people will also just stop selling it and buying it. I think, you know, it's not just this self-fulfilling prophecy. I think we've seen the price of Bitcoin increase through the years, but we've also seen the usage of Bitcoin increase. And I don't think one can grow without the other, essentially. And I think they both grow together. But in the short term, it might be, you know, one over the other. You know, there might be more usage or more store of value use case. That's, where variations can come in. But I tend to agree with Jeff Booth, though, that if Bitcoin isn't used as a means of exchange, well, then actually Bitcoin won't have reached its full potential. And that's where people might start doubting it then. Because, I mean, if you think about the Bitcoin white paper, it doesn't say Bitcoin store of value. It says Bitcoin peer-to-peer electronic cash system, right? And so I think That's the original idea that came with Bitcoin. And I think its properties make it perfect money, including for exchange. And so I believe that people will anyway be naturally drawn to using it as a means of exchange, not only as a store of value. But I guess we'll see kind of what happens, right?
Yeah. I'll kind of give you my thought, and then you're free to comment on it. So I am directionally with Jeff Booth. I think I probably actually agree with you kind of down the middle, with a lean toward Jeff Booth more broadly. And that's because like the example I always use is, you know, Bitcoiners talk about like ending the forever wars with a finite, scarce, decentralized money, right? If governments aren't paying for fighter jets and military equipment with Bitcoin, and the money printer still operates, we don't see that like end result that we've, you know, people have historically in Bitcoin talked about. I think maybe where I disagree with Jeff a little bit is I don't think it necessarily it fails to reach its whole potential, as you says. It doesn't necessarily fail as a store of value. For example, very few people are using gold as a medium of exchange right now, right? But it's continued to operate as a store of value pretty well, and it's reaching all-time highs. Governments do hold, gold on their balance sheets. And so I could see, and this is a fear of mine, not like a hope, I could see Bitcoin still continuing to operate as a store of value for individuals, for governments, whoever, even if commerce isn't being transacted in that, because we have a historical parallel with something like gold. I'd be curious if maybe that's a way that you might think about framing it.
Yeah, well, so I think that's where it's nuanced. But I believe that Jeff Booth's statement was an absolute statement. If it fails as a means of exchange, then it fails as a store of value. And whereas what you're saying, there's still, you know, the small usage between governments kind of thing. Because there is, even though gold is used much more as a store of value than as a means of exchange, it is still used. So it's not absolutely not used, right? So I think that's where the nuance comes in. But taking his words directly, I think it's and this is where it's the philosophical kind of perspective of it, where if no one uses it, well then no one will want it as a store of value, and I think that's where there's Baha'i chances that he's right. I don't know, it's hard to say, to be honest, because of course we don't know how this would play out. But I think gold is anyway a good example of where this would go anyway. I doubt people would completely stop using Bitcoin as a means of exchange, because already today everyone complains how little Bitcoin is used as a means of exchange, yet it is still used, including for big transactions. So, you know, this world of maybe small volume, but high transactions, I think this is a potentially real scenario. Now, at the same time, though, I have to say that, like, as you said, Bitcoiners always talk about the, how we're going to end the Fed, we're going to, like, stop the wars because, you know, sound money and all of this stuff. And I mean, of course, I agree with this, with these ideas, generally speaking, or at least with the hope that comes with these ideas. But the way I talk about Bitcoin now has, you know, really shifted a lot. I don't really talk about when I'm trying to talk with someone that doesn't know about Bitcoin, trying to explain Bitcoin like high level. Now, what I really try and what I feel works and convinces people more, rather than go into a full origins of money and, you know, Austrian economics, like the kind of stuff that it's going to be hard to convince them about. They're like, we have to go deep into a 4-hour conversation. To be honest, I think what works much better is explaining Bitcoin from the means of exchange perspective, because you can very easily give just a few use cases and instantly blow their mind, right? I can show them how I can pay someone in Latin America from Europe, and the payment is received instantly. And, you know, we can work with people abroad. We hire people from Africa that, you know, with the traditional fiat system, we wouldn't be able to hire them ever, right? But we can pay them in Bitcoin, therefore we can hire these people, right? That's the kind of use cases that speak a lot. And even, another one that I like... that's already as part of a conversation. But very often what I'll do, the first thing I do is I'll take my phone, I'll take, because, you know, making a transaction, like I got to send it to someone, like you got to show it. And if that person doesn't know anything, I'm not going to get them to download a Bitcoin wallet. They're never going to use it. They're going to lose that Bitcoin. Instead, what I do very easily is I take out my phone, I take my favorite Nostr clients, which usually is Primal, and I just show them, you see, this is Nostr, some decentralized stuff, doesn't matter, but it looks like Twitter. But I've got this extra button, and it allows me to like make instant microtransactions that no one can stop, no one can censor, and this person received the payment instantly. And if that's not the future of money and of making payments, I don't know what is. Like, it's just a better payment network. And so, you see, and this like instantly clicks there. Oh, really? Oh, wow. Like, it's with this kind of thing that I got my mom to like stack sats just by playing games. And like, you know, it's because this works. It's easy to understand. And the only thing that matters is to make them understand, you know, it's value. It's value. It just so happens that the tech in order to like send this value over is Bitcoin. That's it. And this, like, it really resonates with people. And I find it easier to convince day-to-day people with the means of exchange use case as opposed to the store of value use case. But with conversations with people, you know, going up the ladder of cantillionaires, well, the store of value conversation is easier for them to understand. So it's kind of interesting, you know, how different people based on like where they are on the ladder of cantillionaires resonate with Bitcoin. So, you know, you got to pick what story for what audience. I think that's, anyway, the general advice, right?
Yeah, no, that's interesting because, you know, in my mind, like the first example you gave, I think resonates a lot. Like in the West, like I remember seeing a tweet a couple of years ago, and it was someone talking about Bitcoin's worthless. Like, why would you ever use this? I have Venmo. And someone in like somewhere in Iran, Pakistan, somewhere in the Middle East responded, and they were like, I can't use Venmo here, but I can send value globally, you know, without any intermediaries, without permission. Like, this is like, do you understand the use case now? And so I think the first example you gave of like, hey, we want to hire someone in Africa, we can send them value immediately, no intermediaries. People who are in those scenarios or have experienced that sort of headache of trying to operate through the legacy financial system for global transactions, I could see it clicking very quickly, you know, and like forget all the other properties of it. But if you can just accept for a moment that this is money and look what I can do with it, I can send that value rather quickly. I'm a little bit less sold, candidly, on the like the sort of the second use case, and it's because of that tweet. I think if I went to my, you know, any of my friends, and I was I just got my raw milk farmer to start accepting Bitcoin. She's not orange billed. She's just like, hey, I trust you that this is worthwhile, and it's really no skin off my back to sell a couple gallons of raw milk and accept Bitcoin. But if I try to explain to my friend who's not a Bitcoiner, doesn't really care, not paying attention, see, like I'm able to buy raw milk with Bitcoin, and there were no banks involved, right? And he'd be like, okay, cool, but like you could have just sent her Venmo too. And as far as she's concerned, she got the money or whatever. And so I think it's sort of like a place of, I hate this word because I think the woke left kind of brought it about, but like the financial privilege and, you know, all that sort of stuff. Like, we really are, in many cases, we're privilege that I can buy my raw milk with on Venmo if I want to. And as far as we're as far as we're concerned, there are no banks involved, even though there obviously are multiple and clearinghouses and all that. So I think the medium of exchange use case is a bit harder to explain, at least in my view. And you have more experience, so maybe I'm just wrong, but a little bit harder to explain, like, just how incredibly significant and monumental the fact that there are no intermediaries and there's no one to get in the way, no one to censor you, like that is a big deal. But I just think it's over people's heads in many cases, typically in the West. Is that fair?
Yeah. I think 100%. At Flash we do payment solutions for businesses, yeah, that want to accept payments in Bitcoin. And since we're fully non-custodial, we never touch anyone's money. Well, it means we can be everywhere. And the top markets that we have are Nigeria and the US. And so, you know, we try to talk with people on both sides to kind of understand where our product fits better and all of this. So I end up pitching, you know, both sides of the ocean there. And you know, when I talk to Westerners, like US or even Europe, right, because it's the same kind of financial privilege as you mentioned it, they don't really care. Like, they're just thinking of, okay, I'm hoping I can, you know, maybe reach an extra 1% of people that are already part of this economy. I don't really care for Bitcoin. It's just, you know, if I can be put on some BTC map or something like that, more tourists will find me. Well, then, you know, great. They don't hope on converting some of their customers to paying in Bitcoin. They just hope to reach an extra 1% of customers, right, and increase their revenue this way, which makes sense, right? But then, so, you know, we have to be able to, like, give them solutions for this in particular. But then we also have to be able to explain to them that if you earn in Bitcoin and you keep it in Bitcoin, well, then you can benefit from the store of value side of things, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas when we talk to people from Africa, it's less important. Like, they're just looking for, you know, payment solutions that allow them to be more easily interoperable with their neighbors, including, like, Nigeria is very, it's a country that is very separate from the rest of Africa. Difficult to travel even to the neighboring countries, same thing when it comes to payments. And so Bitcoin can be a pretty good solution when it comes to that, right? And so that's kind of what they're trying to solve, as opposed to, you know, Westerners that, it's just kind of out of curiosity, and maybe the price of Bitcoin goes up, so it's something that's worth checking out and maybe being a part of. So it's two different stories, I agree. And it's a tough one to, like, actually sell in a certain sense, because for someone that doesn't know anything about Bitcoin, we facilitate peer-to-peer payments between merchant and consumer. So we're not involved in the transaction. And it means that there's no intermediary, there's no chargebacks, there's no, like, you know, the stuff that comes because there's intermediaries in the flow of payments in the traditional payment world. And that's awesome. I mean, I think it's awesome. Every Bitcoiner thinks it's awesome, because that's, like, literally the point of Bitcoin. And we just, you know, managed to, like, make this true in a business to consumer environment. But a lot of businesses that, you know, don't really think in terms of custody, rather don't think of custody at all, right? Because most people don't. You're just so used to someone holding custody of your funds that it's not even a topic, you know? It's harder to get them to understand that part of it, which is why relying on the store of value side of things is pretty good. So we even created a calculator. You can check it out at, like, if you type calculator.paywithflash.com, you can choose, you know, what's your product, what's your time frame, and it'll just show you, you know, kind of the opposites of what Bitcoiners like to do with the price of inflation, like, you know, inflation that, like, made you lose money over time. Well, we kind of inverse this concept, saying, had I sold my, I don't know, the sweater that I saw in my store in Bitcoin 2 years ago, well, then it would be worth this much today, right? So we tried to rely more on the store of value side of things as well, just letting them know, you know, you can accept Bitcoin super easy. You can get started for free in 2 minutes. Well, maybe what you want to do then is keep it in Bitcoin, because you can benefit from that out of anyway, this extra 1% revenue that you're anyway thinking about. You're not thinking of converting your customers to Bitcoin.
Yeah. Well, and that's what I'm hoping for with getting my raw milk farmer on board to accept Bitcoin, is that I'm going to track all of my transactions with her for a couple of years, and then go back to her and say, hey, just so you know, I've spent $X on raw milk over the last 4 years, and the value of what I've paid you is worth three times that or whatever. So maybe, like, the store of value use, but, like, as someone who, I mean, she's not strictly running a business. I don't know if they're incorporated or not, because I think she's just a person who is just kind of doing this as a service to the community. But you make an interesting point that there are a lot of headaches that business owners have with banks and with legacy fiat that, like, they're just probably just kind of accustomed to. And if you propose something that can just eliminate that friction, like, that's a huge value add to them. It's an interesting take. And so I guess maybe the people who are going to, because I've always looked at, like, the adoption is, it's always made sense to me. It's a collectible. It's a bunch of, you know, cypherpunks playing around with this thing. And then it's a store of value. It's a scarce digital asset. And then it kind of, you know, it overlaps, but it begins to migrate into medium of exchange. But there are people globally who are I have to remember exist and are probably billions of people who need what you're talking about, this medium of exchange use case now. They can't afford a hardware wallet and, you know, or potentially can't afford a hardware wallet, but like they need the ability to send remittances. They need the ability to transact locally without censorship. It's stuff that I don't have to deal with today. I'm much more cautious of, you know, the Canadian trucker protests and, you know, free speech lockdowns in the UK and all that stuff than the average American is. And so I do worry about that as a potential need for Bitcoin, but most people don't. So it's it's interesting, like sort of taking a backwards approach, but I think you're right. Different people are going to have to come to it in different ways based on today's need. And for most Westerners, I think today's need is how do I protect myself from inflation? How do I store the value of my time and labor? And and obviously Bitcoin serves that now. I don't want to. Yeah, go on.
If I can just give, and because I was mentioning this example just this morning to a group of Nigerian people, actually, you know, trying to explain them Flash and so on. One thing, and we have to see this grow more at scale, and that's you know, the mission we have at Flash, essentially. But I think it's, you know, we will be able to increase the revenue that comes as well to Western companies, and of course, you know, the developing world as much as possible. But because I have an example that I think is pretty interesting with that. So there's a company, they're a partner of ours, one of our clients. They're called Movies Plus. So it's mymoviesplus.com. And essentially, they're a streaming platform that, you know, they have different films, documentaries, all this kind of stuff. And they were literally our first use case with subscriptions. So we provide subscriptions, automatic recurring payments in Bitcoin, including in self-custody. And they added on their website a pay in Bitcoin thing. And it redirects to our checkout and you can connect your wallet and so on. And basically, up until they started accepting Bitcoin subscriptions, they could not serve customers outside of the Western world because, I mean, I have a credit card. So even being in Europe, you know, they're a US business. I can just fill in, you know, name, surname, email address. Then I connect my credit card and, it, you know, they can charge me automatically through Stripe or whatever kind of payment provider they use in the back end. But if you don't have a credit card or you cannot use your credit card abroad, because that's often the case, well, then you cannot use their service. Whereas now that they accept payments in Bitcoin, well, all you need is an email address. You connect your Bitcoin wallet and boom, you have access to their streaming service, right? So potentially even more increasing their reach, because there's an entire, and we're talking billions of people that weren't capable of using their streaming service that are now potential customers, right? And so it's just bringing more people into these modern payment experiences, just, yeah, matching, you know, the fiat payment experiences with the Bitcoin payment experiences and just increase the client base for every single person, every single business in the world.
That's amazing. I want to get to that because I didn't have subscriptions on the list. You're going to have to explain how that works to me. One last question before we dive into Flash specifically. Besides this sort of debate on, you know, it needs to be a medium of exchange, do you have any other concerns at the moment? Because there are a lot of, like, beyond medium of exchange store of value, any other concerns that seem to potentially inhibit Bitcoin's adoption, its growth, its ability to serve as either store of value or medium of exchange?
To be honest, not really. I think Bitcoin is just gonna happen anyway, right? Because Bitcoin doesn't care, first of all, right? The only thing is about regulation. But regulation, it changes so often. And you can see that, like, you know, Europe decided to like tighten things up with regulation. That's something that, for example, in the case of Flash, doesn't concern us at all because we're fully non-custodial, right? So yeah, a lot of our competitors are concerned. They need to move and they need to, like, you know, set up as banks, which is difficult. So when you're a startup, of course, you know, it requires a lot of money, a lot of process and so on. And that's something that doesn't concern us. And on the other side of the ocean, you've got the US that seems to be, you know, like they want to be much more open to the crypto space. We'll see what it looks like in the end in terms of regulation. I think, and you know, I half hope that they will have a similar stance, although not as aggressive, but when it comes to the custody of funds, like there, I mean, I think, you know, if there are some financial processes behind institutions that hold custody of people's funds. I think it's for, like, you know, very often the right reasons, like security, you know, no one being able to just rug pull you and run away with your funds. But you know, the US is definitely much more open to crypto. And these regulations, I think, are also going to shift how the rest of the world thinks of their own regulation, right? I think the EU, they wanted to be like, let's be first at regulate this, like, quite aggressively, because then everyone can just copy paste what we've been doing, and then we can, like, hope to kill the whole crypto industry. But that was a stupid idea, of course. And we see the US that, like, they're going to do their own thing when it comes to that. There's going to be much more friendly, which is likely, you know, whatever amount of time it takes, it could be 6 months, it could be 10 years for all we know, is also going to change the stance that the EU ends up having when it comes to regulation. And I think, like, other than that, I don't see it, except if we start talking about, like, quantum computers, and, you know, I don't know enough about these topics anyway, right? But yeah, I don't really see anything that could be a big risk for Bitcoin.
Yeah, Poland's part of the European Union.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. So does do you use the euro, or do you have a local currency?
No, it's a local currency. It's called the Polish złoty, which means gold.
Okay. So to what extent does Poland typically sort of fall in line with the ECB? And because, like, I know, who was it? The Czech Republic, you know, has kind of come out and they're looking at maybe accumulating some Bitcoin. They've been pretty favorable on, I think, at least long-term capital gains. Is Poland, my sense is Eastern Europe tends to be a bit less communist, maybe. Does Poland sort of fall into that bucket? Do they kind of do their own thing to the extent that they can, or are they more aligned with, like, you know, France, Germany?
Yeah, so that's I mean, first of all, when it comes to the relationship with the European Central Bank, they're much more independent, of course, because they have their own central bank here, and they control their own currency. I mean, to be fair, it's not like they necessarily do it better than the European Central Bank, because inflation is always higher here. And for example, yesterday, the European Central Bank lowered their interest rates. The Polish Central Bank didn't do anything. They've got to react. My guess is they're likely to follow, because, of course, we're in the same economic zone. But I guess we'll see about that. Now, when it comes to regulation, though, this is the EU and the European Commission that sets these rules. And you kind of don't have a choice. So the EU, they set up these rules, and, like, the MiCA regulations, every country has 18 months to actually start enforcing it. Poland has no choice. They also have to enforce it the same way. And that's, I mean, generally speaking, I believe one of the issues of the EU is that, you know, you set a rule and everyone has to follow it, which sucks. Like, a lot of Europeans say, yeah, it's nice that you were heading in a direction similar to, like, the US with, like, different states and the federal government. And I say, no, that's not what's happening. There's just, like, one head. They want to be able to tell you everything. Whereas in the US, there's much more independence, which I think is the better model. But you know, generally speaking, I do agree with, like, what you said, that the rest of the more Western side of Europe feels more communist. Poland is a bit more about, you know, supporting businesses, and we'll see how this evolves, of course, because now the government is much more left-wing. I don't know. I mean, but that's generally the feel. So I'm originally French and Spanish. I've just lived in Poland all of my life, pretty much all of my life. And I believe, like, when it comes to all these things, it's a better place to live in than these countries.
I know from previous experience, I ran a company I sold a few years ago, and we outsourced our software. I'm not a developer. We outsourced our software development to a team in Poland. And it seems like there's a lot of talent and a lot of tech talent in Poland. So I can imagine some of, if you guys can sort of help, you know, help foster an ecosystem in Poland, I imagine we'll see a lot of really cool Bitcoin tech come out of your neck of the woods. So, hey, let's talk about Flash. Why don't you explain what Flash is and what inspired you to become a co-founder and what you're sort of working on?
Yeah. So, where to start? So essentially, yeah, I'll start with what Flash is. So Flash, and I mentioned it a bit earlier, Flash is So software that allows users to connect their wallet to, so it's a web application, and we like to think of it as the Stripe of Bitcoin, with the idea that, you know, you create an account, it's free, there's no KYC whatsoever, and you can connect your wallet to Flash, and then we can interact with your wallet to for the different use cases that we have. And so, you know, if we think in terms of personas, we've got use cases that are like freelancers, content creators, where we've got tools like payment links, a widget to receive donations, or paywalls even that you can add on any website to, you know, force a payment and then you can read an article or watch a video, whatever. Then we've got e-commerce. So, of course, some plugins that come there, and like integration with Wix, Shopify, like, you know, the main platforms, we've got plugins for that. And also hosted solutions, right? So if you're a business that just wants to create a store, well, you can do so in Flash, create your products, add it to a store, and it gives you just a URL that you can, you know, customize your store. And it can be your own store where you monetize in Bitcoin directly to your own wallet. And then the last use case is going to be more like platforms. And so this is where the subscriptions use case comes in, where, you know, you can kind of just like in Stripe, you access your account, you create your subscription with your subscription plans. And essentially the way it works with us is you can redirect your users to a checkout page, and the user can just choose a plan, connect his wallet. And then, you know, whenever the payment needs to happen, we will just make this payment happen. So these payments are fully in the back end. You do not see a QR code ever in the case of subscriptions. Like, you know, QR code in the sense of like typical payment experience that we have with the, you know, Bitcoin Lightning Network. So in this case, no, like the payment happens in the back end. You just receive a notification. If you're using the Flash wallet, for example, you get a notification on your phone saying, you know, payment made, like you've paid your subscription. So I just hinted at it. We also have a wallet. So it's a self-custodial wallet. It's a mobile application. And you can connect it to Flash to also monetize on this wallet directly. But there's multiple wallets that are available out there that I think a lot of people already use.
Yeah, yeah. So is it Lightning and on-chain or?
So today we only have Lightning, but next month we want to add support for Lightning, on-chain, and Liquid, and even USDT. In fact, we'll see if we manage to do all of this next month. But that's what we've got on the roadmap.
Okay. So explain how the subscriptions work, because this is new to me. I was under the impression not really possible, or at least not easily possible without, you know, certain risks. How does that happen? So like, hypothetically, Netflix could use Flash and automate their subscription payments using Bitcoin. Is that?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Okay. How does that work exactly?
Yeah. So essentially, I'm trying to think, you know, to what level. I don't want to get too technical, but essentially, you know, trying to keep things simple. If you were to connect to Netflix right now, staying on the same example, well, you would take your credit card, you would, you know, see the number, so you would input your number on the browser, then you've got, you know, the extra like security and so on. Okay. And you hit confirm, and this sends this information to like a company like Stripe or something. And Stripe is going to trigger a payment from your bank account to their bank account, and then, you know, they'll forward it whenever the merchant can withdraw it. In this case, Netflix. So in our case, it's similar. The thing is that there's a new tech, and we identified this tech very early. It was created by the guys from Albi Wallet, now Albi Hub, that is Lightning company. And essentially what they did is create something called Noster Wallet Connect. And it allows for wallets to communicate between each other, but also between applications, with applications, using Noster events. And it's quite a groundbreaking technology, because what it allows to do is it brings direct debit to Bitcoin, and it does so including in a self-custodial environment. And so in our case, you know, you'd have the same exact interface, but instead of having fields where you input your credit card information, well, then all you need to do is click on a button to connect your wallet, and your wallet can generate a string, so like a long piece of text that essentially looks like a URL. And this is the information that we get. We encrypt it, of course. And with this information, we can do a bunch of stuff. We can like generate payment requests. We can check your wallet balance, the history of your transactions. We can make payments. And so in the case of subscriptions, well, the way it works in our backend, because again, it's backend payments. No one sees a payment. The only thing you see is, you know, the transactions happening in your wallet. And what we do is, you know, we have this wallet connection information with the merchant's wallet. And so whenever we need, we can generate a Lightning invoice from his wallet. And we kind of store it in memory and in the backend. And then with the wallet connection that we have for the consumer, the user that is trying to sign up to Netflix, well, then we are going to take his wallet connection and we're going to simply pass it the Lightning invoice and tell the wallet to make the payment. And so what we do at Flash, all we do is we send messages literally to the wallet. So we send a message to the merchant saying, hey, give me a Lightning invoice, and we receive this. And then we say to the consumer, well, we say, hey, pay this Lightning invoice, and it pays it. And when we have confirmation, well, then, you know, we update the subscription. And for this, you know, we send, yeah, like webhook events and stuff. So the application, they can handle their own backend and update their database and all of this. But yeah, it's quite simple. A wallet connection, and we just tell the wallet, do this or do that. And in this sense, we're exactly in the same position as MasterCard, where, you know, if you have MasterCard or Visa or American Express, if you have a bank account, well, you got to do KYC, and you do KYC with your bank. But you don't do anything with MasterCard. Yeah? MasterCard is automatically connected to your bank account. It's like a service that they provide. And the reason for it is because it's not MasterCard that actually makes the payment. It's your bank account that makes the payment. They just accept that MasterCard is someone that can send a message saying, you know, charge my account. And so we're in this exact same position where we just communicate with the wallet. And so it means that the user is always in control, because from his wallet, whatever wallet it is, he can just kill the connection that he has with Flash and this subscription. And we'll try again. You know, we'll still have the wallet connection. We will try to make a payment, but if he disconnected it, well, it'll just fail. And that's it. And so he's always in control of his funds this way.
Okay, interesting. So it's not as simple as, you know, plugging in a static address for the seller, where we're always going to receive to this. Like it's this brand new transaction. Is it technically complicated to for like the connection to show the end user and have the payment automated to that Lightning invoice? Or is that a pretty easy thing for them?
Yeah, from a user experience perspective, all you do is you click on a button that says Connect Wallet, and then it opens up a modal. It's called Bitcoin Connect. It's open source. Different wallets have different ways of interacting with it. In the case of the Flash wallet, we're going to release it, I think, next week, because this is brand new for the Flash wallet. But essentially, you know, the Flash wallet is a mobile wallet. And so when you'll click on the Connect Wallet, you choose Flash, and it'll show a QR code. And so then you take your wallet, you scan the QR code, and this will create a connection and send this information through this point. But if you think of a wallet like Albiab or CoinOS, well, then with them, it's a login. So you click on their icon and it opens up a pop-up. You have to log into it, or maybe you're already logged in on your browser. Therefore, you just, you know, confirm. So it's really just two clicks, kind of a user experience, and your wallet is connected, and it's connected until you choose to disconnect it. So very simple user experience, much easier than credit card, because you don't need to, you know, check the number, type it all out, or store this information in your browser that could be potentially exploited or something like that. No, it's just two clicks and your wallet is connected.
That's awesome. That's so cool. And you're checking a lot of important boxes for us, no KYC and self-custodial, all that good stuff. What does the onboarding process look like? I'll start there. What is the onboarding process like? If, you know, if I had a small business and I said, okay, I want to start using Flash to accept Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Like how do I get started if I know nothing about tech? Do you have like a team that engages and helps with the setup, or how does this work exactly?
So essentially, it can go either way. You know, we want to talk with every single user that we onboard, but it's completely optional. If you don't want to talk with us, you don't have to. And so essentially, you know, you go like most cases is someone finds our website, kind of reads what's happening there. So it's, you know, paywithflash.com. And there's like a get started button. And that's a basic sign up. So sign up, we just need email, password. You can also log in with Noster if you want, because we're integrated with that. But, you know, email and password is the standard. And you just need to verify your email by just clicking a link, the standard kind of email verification stuff. And then you arrive on the dashboard. Now, if you know nothing about Bitcoin, you likely don't have a wallet, so you won't have a compatible wallet. So what we suggest is to use the Flash wallet. And for this, you know, through the onboarding, literally from your phone, you just scan a QR code that appears. It opens up the, you know, your app store. You download the wallet, and you again scan a QR code from your wallet, and it automatically connects you with the same user account that you used when you signed up. Right, so your wallet and your web application are in sync automatically. And from that moment, you don't need to worry about a wallet because you've already got one. And you can head over to the full dashboard and start creating anything. Like from the moment you decide to try out Flash to getting a wallet to create your first payment link, or, you know, that you can send with an invoice to a customer, it can literally take 3 minutes. And you will earn in full self-custody to your own wallet.
That is so there's the use case. I mean, there's like a selling point for, because you think about the headache of you have to go through as a business of getting a bank account and accept, you know, like I've been there setting up Stripe and, you know, connecting it to, you know, your Shopify or whatever. It's you don't realize how challenging it is until you have an alternative like this. It sounds like that.
I mean, like Stripe, I think on average to actually reach your dashboard, I think it's about 15 minutes of onboarding, including KYC and all of this. Yeah, with us, it's again, just 2 minutes. I mean, we just need an email and password. Like that's it. Very, very simple. And then all of our tools are automatically compatible with whatever wallet you use, right? Because we have a wallet, but it's just an enabler. It just makes this onboarding easier. But if you're already, you know, a Bitcoiner that has, for example, an AlbiHub wallet, well then, I mean, literally it's just email, password, you log in and you connect your wallet in and that's it. And from that moment, you can set up your business to receive peer-to-peer payments directly.
Yeah. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how this isn't the future, you know. I mean, it's better, it's easier, it's everything.
Yeah, 100%. Now there is one thing that I do need to add is, of course, you know, getting started, getting set up, it's free and like no KYC. But we do take a fee. And this fee is also very interesting how we do it. It's kind of, you know, if you use Stripe, well then, you know, that's, you know, if you're charging $10 for a product, well, then the customer is going to pay $10. This payment goes to Stripe. It doesn't go to you. But then you can withdraw this money minus their fee, right? And so they hold custody of these funds. This is why actually you have to KYC. And they need all their AML processes and stuff because they're the ones then sending this money. So we don't do that because, of course, the money goes directly to the merchant. But and this is where this direct debit feature also comes in very, becomes very useful, especially in the Lightning Network environment, where we can automate microtransactions in self-custody, right? And so it's instant payments that are automated, including microtransactions in self-custody. And so when the merchant gets paid, we know when he gets paid because it was through our business tools. Therefore, we trigger a fee payment from his wallet directly. And so when the merchant gets paid, he can start with a wallet that has zero balance on it because he will receive a payment. And the moment he receives the payment, we trigger a 1.5% fee that pays us automatically, right? So similar to how we do with the subscriptions, it's the same logic, only it's to capture our fee. So if you receive, I don't know, 1,500 Satoshis, you will see in your wallet the first transaction that is that you've received X amount. And then you'll see a second transaction that happens instantly at the same moment after you receive your funds. That'll be, you know, the 10 Satoshis of fees that you're sending over to Flash.
So same moment, but separate transactions.
That's
so
right.
That way you've got these disparate, one goes to the vendor, one goes to you. And yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And we can remain non-custodial, never touched anyone's money. The merchant gets paid first.
Very cool. What, what's your approach to marketing and selling this? Are you guys just like kind of going door to door to businesses? Do you have a sales team who's, you know, reaching out, cold calling? Like, how are you finding people to onboard here?
Yeah. So a lot of it is network, you know, knowing people in the space. But there's different stages of it, like, to be completely honest. There's, you know, the low-hanging fruits are people that are monetizing already in Bitcoin, and we can get them to convert over to Flash for basic reasons. You know, it's easier. It's less hassle. I mean, BitSpace server is pretty hard to set up, and it's pretty hard to keep running as well. So, you know, that's where, like, we help. Also, we've actually got customer support, right? Like, we can help everyone through it. So, you know, that's one thing that, like, gets businesses to come over to Flash. And also just the, you know, the wider range of use cases that we have compared to our competitors, right? If you use our subscriptions, well, then, you know, you're a business that is in the Bitcoin space. You're not going to use a different tool for invoicing or for, you know, the other stuff that you're running in your business. And so these are the ones that, you know, we try to reach out to them through, of course, social network like Twitter. And then we also, like, have tools that leverage the network of merchants that are on BTC Map, for example, and so on. So this is for, like, you know, if you think of the adoption curve, right, of technology. These are the early ones, like early adopters. These are Bitcoiners they understand it. They're already monetizing. We don't need to convince them about anything other than our product is superior. But then there's, like, the almost the early majority, the ones that are, you know, in between early adopters and early majority. So for these people, well, it's a bit different. This is much more about LinkedIn, reaching out to people on LinkedIn directly, communicating on LinkedIn. So, you know, try to, like, have as many connections as possible and try to get, you know, some conversation going with them as to what their opinions are about accepting Bitcoin payments. And then it's producing content that will, you know, little by little educate them, hopefully bring them over to us. And then the next part is ads, communicating directly, you know, trying, like, find a greater reach, because through ads on social network, well, you can have a big reach of people. So, you know, we're trying to put a blend of these. But at this stage, to be honest, we're only just starting our ads effort. And so everything has just been organic. We have a bunch of users daily that come in, try it out. And these all come from organic searches, socials, etc.
So what are the types of companies? So I understand that these are tend to be early adopters who are using your service. Makes a lot of sense. Are they companies, you know, selling apparel and it just happens to be a Bitcoiner, or they're just selling, you know, coffee and they happen to be a Bitcoiner, or do they tend to be like Bitcoin companies who have started using Flash?
So it's more the first case that you mentioned. We really want to be able to get Bitcoin companies over, and I think this is where the subscriptions product is really the one that, like, we have to push with them. The moment that we push you know, the release that I mentioned, like, next week or in the next 10 days of the Flash wallet that will be, you know, just better integrated with our subscriptions tool, well, then we'll just be ready to push this much further, because there will be actually, you know, a self-custodial free option to get started with subscriptions that will be much more consumer focused. So it'll be easier to sell then. And I think this is, you know, what will bring Bitcoin companies over, because, I mean, there's so many Bitcoin companies whose only target customer are Bitcoiners, yet they charge them only in dollars because there's no solution for subscriptions in Bitcoin, right? And that's kind of stupid, right? So, you know, we want to be able to, like, provide a solution for them. But, you know, there's also a bunch of other people that are literally just curious. And these are smaller businesses, but also much bigger businesses that I talk to, including, like, corporations. So, you know, when it comes to corporations that I talk with, they're trying to figure out a strategy. They're trying to see, okay, we see that we should think about accepting Bitcoin payments. I mean, crypto payments, that's how they think about it, of course. But so they're scouting, you know, they want to see what's the best solution, what makes sense or not. And with these type of profiles, you know, we really try and highlight the fact that self-custody is the way, peer-to-peer is the way. Otherwise, if you're going for a solution, payment solution with a BitPay, Coinbase, and so on, well, then what are you actually doing? You're not part of the future of money. They're just reproducing the existing model of custody, but in with new currency. So they're not really solving anything, and that's not setting yourself up for the future. Whereas what we're doing is really part of this, you know, new money economy and way of using and holding your funds. So that's the conversation that I have there. But then with, you know, under corporations, but still, you know, medium enterprise, I guess. Well, then with them, it's much more education. They're just curious. You know, they really come from the perspective of, I see Bitcoin headlines like nonstop in the news. I've saw it 10 years ago. I still see it today. Maybe we should like consider it. And when I have conversations with people like that, I'm not really selling flash, actually. I'm just talking about Bitcoin. And I mean, I've got great supporting documentation because I did make a Bitcoin documentary that is one of the most watched on Bitcoin. So on YouTube. So I always redirect them to the documentary as well, just to get this extra information there. But yeah, a lot of it comes through education, really making people understand why Bitcoin is here and is going to stay. But then we have to make them understand why they should focus on the, you know, self-custodial or, you know, stuff like multi-institution custody that are these blended custody solutions and peer-to-peer payments mostly, because this is the future.
Okay, so I would love for you to debunk a fear that I've had for companies like yours. And so I hope you don't take this the wrong way. Mm-hmm. I've had this concern with people who, like, I think the sort of stuff you're building is really important to sort of fulfilling the vision that I and Jeff Booth apparently seem to have for Bitcoin as, you know, the means of exchange globally sometime from now. You know, it's not obviously the dominant source of transactions. My concern has been that people in your shoes could potentially be too early to where the world is headed, that your transaction volume can't sustain the business in the short term. Obviously, I think directionally you're in the right spot, but you know I don't know where we are on the adoption curve as store of value, and you know where medium of exchange certainly. It feels really early. The fact that there's effectively no one in a 20-mile radius of me that I can exchange, you know, goods and services for Bitcoin with, except now my raw milk farmer is accepting Bitcoin. Do you share that concern? Do you ever wonder if you're too early and if the success of your business kind of hinges on just a medium exchange adoption increasing rapidly? Or do you think maybe we're past that and it's just a matter of smooth operations, innovation? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, well, yeah, 100%, because I think about it a lot, of course, you know, as the CEO of a payments company in the space, obviously. But, I think we're definitely early, but early is good, right? So, in our business, we take 1.5% of each transaction. In our case, it's a volumes game. It's about showing that we're using the right technology, and we have the right product in order to get businesses over and help them earn more, right? And so that's our goal is to get our customers to earn more money, right? And so we want to help them in that, right? And so we have a bunch of stuff that, you know, we want to help our customers with. If they're fully activated customers, we want to be able to add them on BTC Map, write articles about them, you know, explain their use case and essentially promote them, because then, yeah, they can earn money. And if they earn money, of course, so do we, right? But we kind of also normalize the use cases. Now, what's good with being early is that you build your tech stack, like your innovation stack. That's one of the co-founders of Square that calls it like that, the innovation stack, where, you know, it's one thing to have the technological solution for, like, you know, the wallet, then the web application that is kind of, you know, the Stripe for Bitcoin that we have. But then there's our entire backend processes. There's the branding. There's, you know, all these elements that make a company that take a lot of time to do, right? It takes a lot of time, a lot of work, and it's done over a long period of time. Getting all of these points right is difficult. In our case, at this stage, of course, we can continue to work if we get investments, because again, very low margin environment. So it's about big scale. And so we need to like grow. We need to work with VCs and so on. And essentially by building all of these innovation stacks well, then we're building ourselves for the long term. And this is what we need to be able to focus ourselves on. Because when it comes to being early or not, we are late enough in the adoption curve that the market of payments in crypto, right? Because this is like, you know, this is how people think about it. Yeah, so we're serving the crypto space. Of course, focusing on Bitcoin, right? But the market that already exists is big enough for us to have the right amount of transaction volume and revenue that shows the progression. That means the moment we reach this, you know, critical moment of mass adoption, that we'll be able to just capture the entire market, right? So being early is good because it increases appetite for investment. As long as we show that we're building our investment, our innovation stack, the way it should be built. And so what we're doing is we're proving that we are doing that and that we're bringing customers over little by little in this growing kind of sense with increasing revenue. And in, you know, with all of this in mind, early is great because the moment critical mass starts coming, it's, you know, then this is the moment where like our business grows extensively. So, you know, I'm not really worried. We just need to make sure we do a really good job and we do it better than our competitors. That's it. If we manage to do that, we, you know, can little by little continue increasing market share that we have of a growing market anyway, and continue building our innovation stack and then, you know, be ready for the moment of mass adoption.
So I imagine that your investors are Bitcoiners, low time preference. Like they're in this for 8 to 10 to 15 years. They're not thinking about how do I make a quick buck, you know, in a year.
Yeah,
is that
so,
fair to say?
Yes, yes, maybe. 100%. But no, definitely. You know, the thing is, we're one company from their portfolio, and our goal is to be the main company from their portfolio, right? And I believe we have like full chances of doing that because with, you know, the products that we have, I think that we can beat our competitors and beat them for the long run, basically. And so, you know, it's kind of, we got to choose, if you invest in a payment company in the Bitcoin space, well, you got to choose the right one. And we just want to be this right one for our investors. But, you know, the typical, you know, progression for startup companies is anyway multiple years, but except for, you know, now the use case of AI is of course next level in terms of, you know, a company is set up and 3 months later they have $10 million of annual revenue. That's just crazy. And in fact, like how it can remove appetite of investors from companies like ours is just mind-blowing. But of course we're working with, you know, Bitcoin-focused investors that themselves are builders in the Bitcoin space and support other companies and share this vision for you know, this growing ecosystem. But low time preference is definitely part of it. But, you know, we're going to be able to show progress because this is the only way we'll get them to increase, you know, their investment and make sure that they stay with us along the way. They're great partners and we want them to remain partners because, you know, it's a relationship when you have investors and we want to make sure they're confident with their investment and that we're taking the company in the right direction.
So if you had to guess, how long from now do you think you're the biggest company in their portfolio, the best ROI? Are we looking at, you know, 3 years, like, you know, I guess some of this could be contingent upon what happens in the legacy system. I mean, do we just hit a wall and things break and Bitcoin becomes a very clear and evident alternative to that? Or can, you know, governments continue to kick the can further and, you know, avoid a monetary reset? But if you were to just sort of speculate, you know, all else equal, are we looking at 5 years? Are we looking at 10 years? Are we looking at 20 years? Like, what do you think that might be?
Yeah, I'm thinking in the range of 5 to 10 years, essentially. And it's really, you know, based on the typical growth that startups like ours have and the growth of the market that we're in, right? And so with these two factors, I think we're talking 5 to 10 years until, you know, we can be the biggest company in their portfolio.
I hope you're right, man, because I think that's the that's gonna be the signal I think many people need to, you know, it's like if I can go down the street and buy groceries, you know, and I know that you guys are on the back end of that payment and you know, Bitcoin's the medium of exchange for those sorts of things. I feel like that's when, I mean, I'll not that I'm not worried about Bitcoin, but those are like some of the fears I have of like, you know, I do agree with Jeff Booth that we need to get to that point. And I love what you guys are building. I guess I'm curious, do you think that's going to just be a gradual adoption into daily payments in Bitcoin? Or do you think is part of your thesis on that, you know, 5 to 10 years right now when everyone's using Venmo and credit cards and all these things? It's a pretty aggressive timeline if you're from the outside looking in. I can see a world where that is reality. Is part of what you're factoring in maybe something like a monetary reset or, you know, governments out of necessity adopting Bitcoin? Or do you just think just with organic natural adoption, that's how long it's going to take?
Yeah, so I think organic natural adoption. I made a documentary called The Great Reset and the Rise of Bitcoin. So I do think that, you know, economic reset is definitely something that is possible. But I don't build my business based on that. You see what I mean? Because yeah, it's like we need to build it more on like some hard data of what we see, what we're seeing in the market, and how things are evolving. No, I think, you know, it's going to be about use cases. I mean, 100%, it's about use cases. It's about showing that it is extremely easy to get started. I mean, think about it. You know, going back to what you were saying, that you set up your Stripe account earlier. And the fact that it kind of a bit messy and it's a tough process. Well, what if we could simplify that to the point where if someone has any kind of idea for a business, well, then the first step that he's going to take is actually try to add Bitcoin payments to it, because it's actually so much easier and he can just test his idea and the flow of payments with it. And only then does he go on to the next step of like, well, okay, maybe it's worth my effort to now like go KYC. If you're a business, you got a KYB. So you need to have a business first, right? And so you can't really test the flow of payments before you've already taken a bunch of steps. Whereas we're completely simplifying that, right? And so that's just, you know, in terms of getting started with things. But then I think it's just the use cases that we can build through this concept. There's two concepts, I think, that are very interesting that we really want to unlock at Flash. Number one is the fact that we can automate microtransactions, right, in self-custody. And so this means that any platform can, and it wasn't possible up until now, it wasn't possible for a social network to add Bitcoin payments up until recently. And the reason for it is not, it was technically possible, of course. The thing, though, is how do you do it in a way that makes sense to you economically? So, you know, you get paid as a social network platform. And how do you do that without needing to register as literally a financial institution, meaning holding user funds, right? Well, very, very difficult. Now, there's a solution. Master Wallet Connect allows to capture fees the same way we do it for ourselves. We can do that at scale for other businesses, right? Huge use case right there, right? The second one, I forgot where I wanted to go. Oh, yeah. The second one, also linked with Master Wallet Connect, is the fact that, so I mentioned how in the case of our subscriptions, and even it's the same with our fees, but, you know, the payment, there's no QR code, right? The payment is a back-end payment. It's automated. It just happens in the background, right? Well, the way it works with Flash is our wallet is compatible with Liquid. It's compatible with Lightning. We know when a wallet is connected. We don't know whose wallet it is. We don't care. We don't even need to know what wallet it is, you know, like whether it's a wallet of Satoshi or whatever, right? We don't care about that either. What matters to us is that we know what networks are available as part of this wallet. And so in the case of our subscriptions, if the merchant's wallet has Lightning and Liquid, and the merchant and the consumer wallet has only Liquid, we can choose to make this transaction in Liquid instead of making it in Lightning, right? And so this interoperability of payment networks in this automated and self-custodial environment will make it so simple that next time, let's say I see you in person and I want to send you some Bitcoin, we will need to have the conversation of like, should it be Lightning, on-chain, Liquid? What wallet do you have? Do you have a Lightning address? Do you have, like, you know, this stuff won't matter anymore because I'll just be able to say, send me 100 sats, whatever amount, one Bitcoin, we don't care. We will be able to choose the best network in the back end for you, right? And so including for these peer-to-peer payments, we can select networks and simplify payment experiences. That's something that doesn't exist anywhere in the world. And we can do it. The tech is out there. It's all open source and we're going to freaking build it. So, you know, it's like, it's these use cases that are going to bring, I think, mass adoption down the road.
Man, that's awesome. I'm excited. Well, hey, we're past an hour now. I'll round out with two questions. So one is, are you shorting Stripe and PayPal at the moment? Is that is that part of your financial plan?
You know, I'm Bitcoin only and only long.
That's the way to do it. And then last question for you. I told you I'd ask it. What is an unpopular opinion that you have? And you get bonus points if you offend some Bitcoiners with this opinion.
So I think Bitcoiners build, and Bitcoin companies in general, they build for Bitcoiners and not necessarily the real world and what people actually look for, right? That's why adoption is so slow. There's a lot of like, Bitcoin is in the space, they build some tech, they open source it, and, you know, they move on to something else, right? And I think, you know, it's good because it creates opportunity for people like me, obviously, because, you know, we can see this tech. I'm not as smart as them to be able to, like, build the same thing, but I know how to use it, right? And so that's, you know, the one of the points. But also, like, adoption is slow because of that and because of the fact that we're thinking only in such niche terms. Somehow, the crypto world has done a much better work at adoption than the Bitcoin world. Like, why is that? It's all a matter of user experience, of thinking about use cases and developer experience. And I think that's where the Bitcoin community lacks. And, you know, it's a matter of time. This will change. But yeah, I think that's maybe a bit of an unpopular opinion. Bitcoiners build like more for the long term, but they build worse than like, you know, standard web development.
Yeah, no, it makes sense. I think about this a lot, not from a tech perspective, but, you know, in like how I go about orange pilling someone. I'm so deep into the Bitcoin rabbit hole that it's easy for me to like lose perspective on what do they know, what are their needs. And, you know, I think like I've been sort of shilling Larry Lepard's book, The Big Print, lately because I read it you know, as soon as I got it. And it sort of reminded me of like, what is this big problem we're trying to solve? And I feel like it's a book that I could share with someone who has no concept of the problem that Bitcoin is solving. And they can look at that and say, this system is demonstrably broken. Like it's so evidently broken, but I didn't have all these sort of pieces of information. I just knew about Occupy Wall Street. I heard about it in the news and I knew the bailouts, but like, I didn't realize that that was me paying for socialized losses of big banks. And the only reason that's possible is because of central banking and, you know, this banking cartel. And I think I suspect you're onto something important there, that Bitcoiners tend to, we get in our echo chamber and we sort of build amongst ourselves. And the easier we can make it for people to onboard into Bitcoin without having to know everything about Bitcoin or having to be technical or, you know, be fully bought in and engaged with the Bitcoin community, so to speak, I think the better. So, yeah, I like that, man. I'm sure you'll offend some builders with that opinion, but hey, so be it.
So be it, I guess.
Yeah. Well, Pierre, hey, this hour flew, man. This is a lot of fun. I don't spend enough time thinking about medium of exchange because what we do at the Bitcoin Way is a lot of the, so much of our work is just helping people take proper 100% self-custody, no counterparty risk, no KYC, none of the nonsense. So it's good to revisit these topics. You know a lot about it, and I love that you're on the front lines of it all. Why don't you give a handoff, tell people where they can find you, learn more about Flash, anything you want to share?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, you can find me on Twitter. So just look for Pierre Corbin, and I should be one of the first results. From there, you can, of course, follow all of my insights on the market, but also you can find Flash. You can go straight to the website, paywithflash.com. And, you know, just don't hesitate to reach out. You can also write me an email, pierre.corbin@paywithflash.com. Happy to help you out, answer any kind of questions. Now, there is one thing I do want to plug that's, you know, I don't know how much of your audience like travels and is also in Europe, but I co-founded the Bitcoin Film Fest, which is a film festival, and it happens every year in Poland, in Warsaw. So it's, you know, for more people that are in Europe or want to travel, you know, cross the ocean and come over. So that's end of May. 23rd to 25th of May, just celebrating culture and Bitcoin films. Yeah, so if ever you can, come around.
Awesome, man. Pierre, thank you so much for joining the pod. I really appreciate it. Love the conversation. And I can't wait to see what you guys do over the next months and years.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. It was a good conversation.
Cheers. And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Pierre. Love what they are doing at Flash. Go check out Flash if you own a business, you're looking to accept Bitcoin as payment, and go follow Pierre on X. Check out his film festival as well in Warsaw if you are in the area or want to make the trip. And of course, if you need help with Bitcoin in proper self-custody, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast to learn more about how we can help. We will train you on the steps to do it right first time. We also help with online privacy. We'll help you set up a privacy phone. We have a Plan B residency option, everything you need for your self-sovereignty needs. Again, that's thebitcoinway.com/podcast. If you're enjoying the show, do me a favor, feed the algorithm a bit. Leave us a comment, give us a like, subscribe to the channel, share it with someone who you think might be interested in it. Would really, really appreciate that. And as always, until next time, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom. We'll be right back.